This week's show is sponsored by Anne McLean of Blue Pacific Realty. She and her lovely dog, Ami, love to listen to the stories. Thank you, Anne. It is because of Anne and listeners like you that KCIW can continue to provide quality programming. Thank you. Welcome to Gima's Tales for Children. Each week, we visit a different part of the world to hear stories, legends, and myths. Some of these stories are so old that the origin has been lost in time. Some are new, and some are timeless. Join us as we travel this week to Romania. Romania was first settled in 200 BC by a tribe known as the Thracians. Rome conquered them, and then it was overrun by the Huns and other warring tribes. It wasn't until 1878 that Romania became an independent nation. That lasted for less than 100 years. Germany occupied it, then the Soviet Union, and just 11 years ago, it received its independence again. The entire country is slightly smaller than the state of Oregon, and it's beautiful, with lush green forests, ancient castles, and quaint villages. For further information about Romania for children on the internet, I suggest www.ducksters.com. The first story from Romania has a moral at the end, and a man who is quite the daydreamer. Here is the Pea Emperor. There was once a good-for-nothing fellow who was so poor and needy that he had not even enough to eat to be able to drink water after it. When he had wandered through all the countries in the world, he returned home somewhat more sensible. He had passed through many perils abroad, knocked his head against the top of the door, been sifted through the coarse and the fine sieve. He would now gladly have pursued some trade, but he had no money. One day he found 3 peas. After picking them up from the ground, he put them on the palm of his hand, looked at them, pondered a long time, and then said, laughing, "If I plant these seeds in the ground, I shall have 100 in a year. If I afterward plant 100, I shall have thousands. And if I put these thousands in the earth, I shall reap who knows how many. If I go on in this way, I shall finally become a rich man. But if I could help wealth to come quicker, let me see." He went to the emperor and begged him to order through the whole empire barrels in which to keep his peas. When the emperor heard that he needed such a quantity of barrels, he thought he must be stifling in money, and was more and more convinced of it when he entered into conversation with him. What is true must remain true. He didn't keep his mouth shut, but opened it and bragged till it would have been supposed that real pearls fell from his lips. He told the emperor what he had seen in foreign lands, related how things were here and there, spoke of this and that, till the emperor stood before him with his mouth wide open. When he saw that the emperor marveled at his statements, he bragged more and more, saying that he had palaces, herds, and other riches. The sovereign believed the boaster's stories and said to him, "I see that you have traveled, know a great deal, and are cunning and experienced. If you wish, I will gladly give you my daughter in marriage." The braggart now regretted having told so many lies, for he did not know how to escape the monarch's proposal. After reflecting a short time, he plucked up courage and said, "I will gladly accept the position of son-in-law you offer, and will try to show you that I am worthy of it." The necessary preparations were made, and after some time an imperial wedding was celebrated in the palace. Then the man remained there. 1, 2, several weeks elapsed, and no trace of peas and wealth appeared. Finally, the emperor began to repent what he had done, but there was no help for it, and the emperor's son-in-law perceived, from the manner of the courtiers and nobles, that they had very little respect for him. His cheeks burned with shame. He made useless plans, tortured himself to find some means of getting out of the scrape, and could not even sleep at night. One morning, without anyone's knowledge, he left the palace at dawn, walked on till he came to a meadow, and wandered along absorbed in thought, without knowing where he was going. Suddenly, a rosy-cheeked man stood before him and asked, "Where are you going, gossip? You look as sad and thoughtful as if all your ships had sunk in the sea." The emperor's son-in-law related his dilemma and what he was seeking, and the man replied, "If I deliver you from your difficulty, what will you give me?" "Whatever you ask," he answered. "There are 9 of us, brothers," said the man, "and each knows a riddle. If you guess them, our whole property shall be yours, but if not, your first child must be ours." The emperor's son-in-law, utterly crushed with shame, agreed, hard as it was for him, hoping that before the child was born he might find somebody who could tell him what to do. So they set out together, that the stranger might show him the herds of cattle he owned and his palaces, which were not far off. They also instructed the herdsmen, swineherds, shepherds, and laborers what they were to say, if anybody asked to whom the flocks and herds belonged. At the end of the tour, the rosy-cheeked man suddenly turned to him and said, "By the way, you should know that I and all of my brothers are in truth dragons." On his way back to the palace, he met an old man in the fields, and seeing how aged and feeble he was, he pitied him and offered him alms. The old man would accept nothing, but asked permission to enter his service, telling him that he would be none the worse for it. When the emperor heard that his son-in-law wanted to go to his own palace, he was so delighted that he commanded everything to be arranged on a grand scale. Therefore, on the following day, the whole court started off on their journey. All the directions had been given by the old man who had taken service with the emperor's son-in-law. He said that he was the Pea Emperor's steward. They traveled till they reached the fields. When the overseer of the fields saw them, he came up, cap in hand. "To whom do these estates belong, my friend?" asked the emperor. "To the Pea Emperor," replied the man. The emperor grew fat with joy, for he now believed that his son-in-law really was no beggar. They drove on some distance further and met numerous flocks and herds of all sorts of animals. The emperor asked one keeper after another to whom they belonged, and all replied, "To the Pea Emperor." But when they reached the palace of the 9 dragons, the emperor marveled at its magnificence. They were received at the gate by a band of musicians. The interior of the palace was adorned with real gems. A magnificent banquet was prepared, and they drank the finest wine. After the emperor had wished his son-in-law every happiness, he returned to his own home, greatly delighted with the riches he had seen. But the Pea Emperor was almost dead with anxiety. Evening came. The old servant said to his master, "Master, what you have seen of me since I entered your service must have convinced you of my fidelity. Now I assure you that I can help you still more. Let me spend the night in some corner of the chamber where you are sleeping, even if it is behind the door. I advise you not to answer a single word, no matter who calls you by name or how great a noise is made." "Be it so," said the Pea Emperor. After they had laid down and put out the light, they heard a dull, rumbling noise like an approaching thunderstorm. Then a hoarse, rough voice said, "Pea Emperor." "What do you want?" replied the old man.
"I'm not calling you. I'm calling the Pea Emperor."
"That's just the same thing," replied the old man. "My master is asleep. He's tired." Then the noise of many voices was heard, as if people were quarreling. Again the first one repeated,
"Pea Emperor."
"What is it?" the old man answered.
"What is one?"
"The moon is one."
"Is it you, master?"
"Burst, dragon!" Then a terrible wailing arose, as if all the spirits of evil were abroad, and another voice said,
"What is two?"
"Two eyes in the head see well."
"Is it you, master?"
"Burst, dragon!"
"What is three?"
"Where there are 3 grown daughters in a house, beware of putting your head in."
"Is it you, master?"
"Burst, dragon!"
"What is four?"
"The cart with 4 wheels runs well."
"Is it you, master?"
"Burst, dragon!"
"What is five?"
"5 fingers on the hand hold well."
"Is it you, master?"
Burst, dragon! Again there was a noise like a thunderstorm, and the palace shook as if the earth was quaking. And again there was a shout for the Pea Emperor. This time, too, the old servant answered. Another voice asked,
What is six?
The flute with six holes blows well.
Is it you, master?
Burst, dragon!
What is seven?
Where there are seven brothers, don't meddle with their affairs.
Is it you, master?
Burst, dragon!
What is eight?
The plow with eight oxen furrows the earth well.
Is it you, master?
Burst, dragon!
What is nine?
Where there are nine grown daughters in a house, it is not swept.
Is it you, master?
Burst, dragon! The Pea Emperor, who heard all this, could not sleep all night long, even when it grew so still that one might have heard a fly buzz. When he rose the next morning, the old servant had vanished. He went out of the palace, and what did he behold? The scattered corpses of nine dragons, which he gave to the ravens. While thanking God for having preserved his life and delivered him from disgrace, he heard a sweet voice say, Your compassion for the poor man saved you. Always be charitable. Helping the poor seems to be an important theme in the Tales from Romania. Here's one with an amazing bird in it. It is called The Little Purse with Two Halfpennies. There was once an old man and an old woman. The old woman had a hen, and the old man had a rooster. The old woman's hen laid two eggs a day, and she ate a great many, but she would not give the old man a single one. One day the old man lost patience and said, Listen, old crony, you live as if you were in clover. Give me a couple of eggs, so that I can at least have a taste of them.
No, indeed, replied the old woman, who was very avaricious. If you want eggs, beat your rooster that he may lay eggs for you, and then eat them. I flogged my hen, and just see how she lays now.
The old man, being stingy and greedy, listened to the old woman's talk, angrily seized his rooster, gave him a sound thrashing, and said, There now, lay some eggs for me, or else go out of the house. I won't feed you for nothing any longer. As soon as the rooster escaped from the old man's hands, it ran off down the high road. While thus pursuing its way, lo and behold, it found a little purse with two halfpennies. Taking it in its beak, the bird turned and went back toward the old man's house. On the road, it met a carriage containing a gentleman and several ladies. The gentleman looked at the rooster, saw a purse in its bill, and said to the driver, Get down and see what this rooster has in its beak. The driver hastily jumped from his box, took the little purse from the rooster's bill, and gave it to his master. The gentleman put it in his pocket and drove on. The rooster was very angry and ran after the carriage, repeating continually, Kikeriki, sir! Kikerikak! To me the little purse give back! The enraged gentleman said to the coachman as they passed a well, Take that impudent rooster and throw it into the well! The driver got down from his box again, seized the rooster, and flung it down the well. When the rooster saw that its life was in such great danger, what was it to do? It began to swallow the water, and drank and drank and drank, till it had swallowed all the water in the well. Then it flew out and again ran after the carriage, calling, Kikeriki, sir, kikerikak, to me the little purse give back. When the gentleman saw this, he was perfectly amazed and said, Ho, ho, this rooster is a perfect imp. Never mind, I'll wring your neck, you saucy cockerel. When he reached home, he told the cook to take the rooster, throw it on the coals burning upon the hearth, and push a big stone in front of the opening in the chimney. The old woman did what her master bade her. When the rooster saw this new injustice, it began to spit out the water it had swallowed till it had poured all the water from the well upon the burning coals. This put out the fire, cooled the hearth, and made such a flood on the kitchen floor that the cook fainted away from pure rage. Then, the rooster gave the stone a push, came out safe and sound, ran to the gentleman's window, and began to knock on the panes with its bill, screaming, Kikeriki, sir! Kikerikak! Do me the little purse give back! Heaven knows that I've got a torment in this monster of a rooster, said the gentleman,
Driver, rid me of it. Toss it into the middle of the herds of cows and oxen. Perhaps some bull will stick its horns through it and relieve us.
The coachman seized the rooster and flung it among the herds. You ought to have seen the rooster's delight.
It swallowed bulls, oxen, cows, and calves till it had devoured the whole herd, and its stomach had grown as big as a mountain. Then it went to the window again, spread out its wings before the sun so that it darkened the gentleman's room, and once more began, "Kikeriki, sir, kikerikak, to me the little purse give back."
When the gentleman saw this, he was ready to burst with rage and did not know what to do to get rid of the rooster. He stood thinking till at last an idea entered his head. "I'll lock it up in the treasure chamber. Perhaps if it tries to swallow the ducats, one will stick to its throat, and I shall get rid of the bird." No sooner said than done. He grasped the rooster and flung it into the treasure chamber. The rooster swallowed all the money and left the chests empty. Then it escaped from the room, went to the gentleman's window, and again began, "Kikeriki, sir, kikerikak, to me the little purse give back." As the gentleman saw that there was nothing else to be done, he tossed the purse out. The rooster picked it up, went about its own business, and left the gentleman in peace. All the poultry ran after the rooster so that it really looked like a wedding, but the gentleman turned green with rage as he watched and said, sighing, "Oh, let them all run off to the last chick. I'm glad to be rid of the torment. There was witchcraft in that rooster." But the puffed-up rooster stalked proudly along, followed by all the fowls, and went merrily on and on till he reached the old man's house and began to crow, "Kikeriki!" When the old man heard the rooster's voice, he ran out joyfully to meet the bird. But looking through the door, what did he see? His rooster had become a terrible object. An elephant beside it would have seemed like a flea, and following behind came countless flocks of birds, each one more beautiful and brilliant than the other. When the old man saw the rooster so huge and fat, he opened the gate for it. "Master," said the bird, "spread a sheet here in the middle of the yard." The old man, nimble as a top, laid down the sheet. The rooster took its stand upon it, spread its wings, and instantly the whole yard was filled with birds and herds of cattle. But it shook out on the sheet a pile of ducats that flashed in the sun till they dazzled the eyes. When the old man beheld this vast treasure, he did not know what to do in his delight, and hugged and kissed the rooster. But all at once the old woman appeared from somewhere, and when she saw this marvelous spectacle, her eyes glittered in her head, and she was ready to burst with wrath. "Dear old friend," she said, "give me a few ducats." "Pine away with longing for them, old woman. When I begged you for some eggs, you know what you answered. Now, flog your hen, that it may bring you ducats. I beat my rooster, and you see what it has fetched me." The old woman went to the hen coop, shook the hen, took it by the tail, and gave it such a drubbing that it was enough to make one weep for pity. When the poor hen escaped from the old woman's hands, it fled to the highway. While walking along, it found a bead, swallowed it, hurried back home as fast as possible, and began to cackle at the gate. The old woman welcomed it joyfully. The hen ran quickly in at the gate, passed its mistress, and went to its nest. At the end of an hour, it jumped off, cackling loudly. The old woman hastened to see what the hen had laid, but when she glanced into the nest, what did she perceive? The hen had laid a glass bead. When the old woman saw that the hen had fooled her, she began to beat it, and beat it till the poor hen died. The old woman remained as poor as a church mouse. From that time she might live on roast nothing and golden wait a while instead of eggs, for she had abused and killed the poor hen, though it was not at all to blame. But the old man was very rich. He built great houses, laid out beautiful gardens, and lived luxuriously. He made the old woman his poultry maid. The rooster he took about with him everywhere, dressed in a gold collar, yellow boots, and spurs on its heels, so that one might have thought it was the most important bird in the empire and not a mere ordinary rooster, which, of course, in truth, it was not. The last story today is somewhat like other stories from Europe which feature two girls and a meeting with Mother Frost, but not in Romania.
Instead, the one whom they meet is a magical creature with the name of Sunday. Here is the two stepsisters. Once upon a time, there was an old widower who had one daughter. He married again and took for his wife a widow who also had a daughter. The widow's daughter was ugly, lazy, obstinate, and spiteful. Yet as she was her mother's own child, the latter was delighted with her and pushed everything upon her husband's daughter. But the old man's child was beautiful, industrious, obedient, and good. Whenever there was any hard work to be done, it was put upon the old man's daughter. She was obliged to get dry wood from the forest, drag the heavy sacks of grain to the mill. Every task always fell to her lot. The whole livelong day she had no rest, but was kept continually going upstairs and down. Still, the old woman and her treasure of a daughter were constantly dissatisfied and always had something to find fault with. One day, the father called the young girl and said, "My dear child, your mother is always saying that you are disobedient to her, have a spiteful tongue, and are wicked, so that it is not possible for you to stay any longer in my house. Go wherever your feet guide you, that there may no longer be so much quarreling here on your account." When the poor girl saw that her stepmother and her daughter wanted to drive her out of the house at any cost, she kissed her father's hand and went out into the wide world without any hope of ever returning home. She walked along the road till she chanced to meet a little sick dog, so thin that one could count its ribs. When the dog saw her, it said, "You beautiful, industrious girl, have pity on me and take care of me. I will reward you some day." The girl did pity the poor animal, and taking it into her arms, washed and cleaned it thoroughly. She left it and went on, glad that she had been able to do a good action. She had not walked far when she came to a fine pear tree in full bloom, but it was completely covered with caterpillars. When the pear tree saw the girl, it said, "You beautiful, industrious girl, take care of me and rid me of these caterpillars. I will repay you for it some day." The girl, with her usual diligence, cleared the pear tree from its dry branches and most carefully removed the caterpillars. She walked quietly on to seek some place where she might enter into service. On her way, she came to a ruined, neglected fountain, which said to her, "You beautiful, industrious girl, take care of me. I will reward you some day." The little maid cleared the fountain, cleaned it thoroughly, and then went on again. As she walked, she came to a dilapidated oven, which had been almost entirely useless. As soon as the oven saw her, it said, "You beautiful, industrious girl, line me with stones and clean me. I will repay you some day." The young girl rolled up her sleeves, moistened some clay, stopped the holes in the stove, greased it, and cleaned it till it was a pleasure to see it. She walked on and on until, early one morning, she came, after passing through a dark forest, to a beautiful meadow. In the meadow she saw a little house, completely overgrown with vines, and when she approached it an old woman came out, kindly, to meet her and said, "What are you seeking here, child, and who are you?" "I am seeking service, and as I know nobody, and am wandering from place to place, I have lost my way. I beg you to give me shelter." "Poor child, I am the goddess of Sunday. Serve me today, and I promise you that you shall not leave my house empty-handed tomorrow."
"Very well, but I don't know what I have to do."
"You must wash and feed my little children, who are now asleep, and then cook my dinner when I come home from church. I want to find it neither hot nor cold, but just right to eat."
The old woman set off for church. The young girl rolled up her sleeves and went to work. First of all, she prepared the water for the bath, then went outdoors and began to call, "Children, children, children, come to mother and let her wash you." When she looked up, what did she behold? The courtyard was filled, and the woods were swarming with a host of dragons and all sorts of wild beasts of every size. The young girl did not quail, but taking one animal after another, washed and cleaned it in the best possible way. Then she set about cooking the dinner, and when Sunday came out of church and saw her children so nicely washed and everything so well done, she was greatly delighted. After she had sat down to the table, she told the young girl that she might go up into the attic, choose whatever chest she wanted, and take it away with her for her wages, but she must not open it until she reached her father's house. The maiden went to the garret, and there were a number of chests, some old and ugly, others new and beautiful. She took the oldest and ugliest of them all. When she came down with it, the goddess of Sunday frowned slightly, but there was no help for it, so she blessed the girl, who took her trunk on her back and joyfully returned to her father's house. On the way, lo and behold, there was the oven full of beautifully risen, nicely browned cakes. The girl ate and ate as many as she could, then took some with her for her journey and went on. Soon she came to the fountain she had cleaned, and which was now filled to the brim with water. On the edge stood two silver goblets, from which she drank the water until she was entirely refreshed. Then, taking one goblet with her, she walked on. As she went, lo and behold, there stood the pear tree she had cleaned, full of pears as yellow as wax, perfectly ripe and as sweet as honey. When the pear tree saw the girl, it bent its branches down to her, and she ate some of the fruit and took more pears to eat on the way. She journeyed on again, and lo and behold, she next met the little dog, which was now well and handsome. Around its neck it wore a collar of ducats, which it gave the old man's daughter as a reward for taking care of it in its sickness. The young girl at last reached her father's house. When the old man saw her, his eyes filled with tears. The sight of so much wealth instantly made the old man young again, but his wife stood as if she were dazed and did not know what to do in her rage. Her daughter, however, plucked up courage and said, "Never mind, mother. The world isn't emptied yet. I'll go and fetch you still greater treasures." She angrily set off at once. She met the sick, feeble dog, passed the pear tree covered with caterpillars, the dry, neglected fountain, and the dilapidated oven. But when dog, tree, fountain, and oven begged her to take care of them, she answered rudely and scornfully, "Do you suppose I'll soil my delicate hands? Have you often been tended by people like me?" She, too, at last reached the goddess Sunday. Instead of cooking the dinner nicely and washing Sunday's children, she burned them all till they screamed and ran off. The food she let curdle so that no one could eat it, and when Sunday came home, she covered her eyes and ears in horror at what she found in her house. Even the gentle, indulgent goddess could not get along with such an obstinate, lazy girl as this one. So she told her to go up into the garret, choose any chest she wanted, and then continue her journey. The girl went, took the newest and handsomest trunk, for she liked to get as much as possible of the best and finest things, and hurried off. When she reached the oven, there were some nice cakes in it, but when she approached to satisfy her hunger, the fire burned her. The silver goblets were again at the fountain, and the fountain was full of water to the brim, but when the girl tried to seize the cup to drink, the goblets instantly vanished. The water dried up, and the girl almost died of thirst. When she came to the pear tree, it stood full of pears, but the tree had made itself 1,000 times as tall as before, so that its boughs touched the clouds. Going further on, she met the dog, which again had the collar of ducats around its neck, but when the girl tried to take it off, the dog bit her and ran away. She reached her mother's house, but when the old man's wife opened the chest, out came a host of dragons, which swallowed her and her daughter, and then dragons, trunk, and all vanished. The old man could now live in peace and possess countless riches. His daughter, she married a good and loving man, and of course, they lived happily ever after. So we've come to the end of our time together today. If you have a story you'd like to hear, please feel free to write me with your request. If you've written a children's story and would like to share it, let me know as well. You can email me at gima@kciw.org. See you next week. Same time, same place, but very different stories. We'll be traveling to South America and visiting the country of Argentina. Stay safe, have fun, and let your imagination soar. This is Gima saying goodbye and happy reading.